Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Hey, everyone. This is Laz Jackson of Detroit Bad Boys. And on this week's podcast, Ben Gulker and I talk about your 6 and 18 Detroit Pistons. We talk about Killian Hayes out-dueling Luka Doncic as the entire NBA universe looked on, Marvin Bagley finding his stride offensively, and the Pistons' struggles at the free throw line. As always, we appreciate your continued support of the podcast. The best way to do that is to share, subscribe, and leave comments. Please leave comments on the discussion post on Detroit Bad Boys. That's the best way for us to have the conversation that we want to have around the podcast. In order to do that, though, you have to follow DetroitBadBoys.com, which you should be doing, because it's the best place on the internet for Pistons news and analysis this season. With all that said, it's time to go to work. Hello, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of the Detroit Bad Boys podcast. I am your host, Lazarus Jackson. Pleased, as always, to be joined by Big Ten champion Ben Gulker. Ben, how are you feeling after yesterday?
I'm feeling better after that first half, or after that second half, I should say. First half. First half, they had the blood pressure spiking. I'm telling you, they seem to be a second half team, though. So, I'll take it. Sad to hear the news about Blake Corum going down for season-ending surgery. This seemed like this should have been his moment in the sun. But great season for the Michigan Wolverines, so I'm happy about that.
So who are you hoping to face in the playoff?
Oh, it doesn't matter. I'll be honest. I feel like the Big Ten might be a little bit overhyped. I'm a little worried that maybe Michigan is a smidge overrated at number two in the country, but they've been surprising me all season, so maybe they've got more hidden than I realize. So I don't think it matters.
Yeah, I'm not like a huge college football watcher, but I watched the TCU game yesterday. They looked pretty vulnerable. I watched the LSU game, LSU Georgia. They also did not look good. Clemson hasn't looked good all season. Like, I think you and Georgia are probably just the two best teams in the country. It's just Georgia's probably way, way better than you. So,
well, thanks, Les. That's awesome. Nah,
Georgia's way, way better than everybody. So, yeah, okay. Yeah. I hope we don't see the Alabama sneak in. Be interested to see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
That'd be super boring. Disappointed in TCU, honestly. But yeah, we should probably actually talk about the Detroit Pistons before I go off on like 5 more minutes about college football. The Pistons had a decent week. Most importantly, I think the team roster has been reinforced, right? Jaden Ivey came back. Sadiq Bey is back. I don't know if Sadiq Bey counts as a reinforcement at this point, but we're going to talk about this later. Isaiah Stewart came back. Bojan, even though we knew Bojan wasn't going to miss like that much time, he's also back. Ben, I had forgotten like this team actually looks like pretty good with all of their young dudes, even if their young dudes are not amazing players. It's nice to have the full complement of most of the full complement of players back this week. And then, of course, Isaiah Livers is going to miss some time with the shoulder strain. So they can't get perfectly healthy no matter what.
Yeah, Isaiah Livers hurts his shoulder, then knocks down a three just like purely on the next possession and then has to come out, which was interesting. But yeah, that seems to be the way it goes when you're relying on health to be competent, you're always going to be down at least a guy or two. And so you can't ever quite be right. But it is reassuring to know that, Troy Weaver had a vision for this team to be at least competitive. It was hard to remember that when things were really, really bad.
Yes, it was.
But we're getting to see some of that vision of being competitive. Not there all the way, clearly. Still a long ways away. But some competitive basketball. I mean, we're just going to pretend the New York game didn't happen, right? I mean, that's I'm pretending. Okay, yeah. Perfect. So, yeah. So they were competitive this week.
Absolutely. And the New York game was the first kind of blowout they've had in the last 8 or 9 games. And so in watching that game, that was just, no one told me it was Julius Randle's birthday, apparently. And so he played well on his birthday, making, 6 threes in the first quarter or whatever. Sure, that's going to happen, apparently. But I don't think that was indicative of where the team has been over the last 2 weeks anyway. But but with the full complement of players back, we are getting a closer look at the rotations and lineups I expected to see kind of at the beginning of the year before, everybody started going down with injuries. And so I wanted to get your thoughts about the 2 big lineup, right? We're finally seeing that lineup with Marvin Bagley and Isaiah Stewart get some extended run. The stats on them per NBA.com, I don't have cleaning the glass, is they're a negative 7.6 net rating with 122 defensive rating, which is bad. But they're doing a pretty good job on the offensive glass. They're doing a decent job of keeping the pace up. That's one of the slower lineups the Pistons have used, which is not totally unexpected with 2 bigs. But being able to get extra possessions on the offensive glass is, I think, going to help them in terms of just playing the possession game. But the defense, that defensive number kind of concerns me. What have your thoughts been so far on the Marvin Bagley, Isaiah Stewart pairing been?
Yeah, I think, it's fine. I think that seems about right. You talked about rebounding. They crushed the Mavs 52-30 in a win. So that was nice to see. I think rebounding was particularly, it was kind of the unsung hero of the story. We'll talk about Killian in a minute. I mean, obviously his breakout in overtime was the big story of that win. But crushing Bagley and Stu both crushed on the glass. Bagley, I think, was particularly active on the offensive glass, which was nice to see. He was a problem for the Mavs all night in that regard. I think in terms of the net rating, that blowout loss to the Knicks sort of skews that. Probably it's a small enough sample where one big loss can skew that in one direction. Look, the defense is still not good. I don't think 2 bigs are a silver bullet. I don't think it's going to solve anything that in terms of the defensive woes. And I think athletic fours are still going to be a problem. I think no matter how you shuffle this big man rotation, athletic bigs are a problem. Christian Wood was really problematic, for example, against the Mavs. You talked about Julius Randle. The Knicks kind of seem like kryptonite to this Pistons roster. I mean, they just have all sorts of problems for the Pistons. But I think athletic fours, Bagley and Stu, are going to struggle. They're just not equipped to deal with that. But you do shore up the defensive glass in particular with 2 big guys. That's been a problem all season. The Mavs game in particular highlights that. I mean, 52-30 is dominant. That explains a lot of why they were able to win, I think, particularly offensively. They shot the ball really well, but then even when they didn't shoot well, they generated a lot of extra opportunities. So, that I think is the case statement for why you'd want to run 2 bigs. So, I don't think there's any particular lineup with this roster that's perfect. You're just having trade-offs. You're going to have to make some trade-offs no matter how you shuffle the cards. I think this is fine. I think we'll talk about Bagley in a second. He's playing well enough offensively that I think some of the trade-offs you make defensively, and I think he's rebounding well enough that he's justifying this lineup for right now.
Yeah. Bagley is kind of the swing piece that has to make this lineup work, because earlier, when he wasn't playing well, as the solo big, right, it was a real he had his limitations defensively come are even more thrown into contrast when you don't have another rebounder alongside him. So you can't even, if you're trying to switch him out or if he's, playing too deep and drop, you can't even attack the glass like when he's like contesting with guys like Boyan and Sadiq out there at the four. It's been interesting to me that the defense has been that bad. I didn't expect to see that bad of a number, the 122, that was higher than I was expecting. That is also kind of like roughly what it was last season, so maybe my expectations were misplaced. There was some like talk of Marvin Bagley being more active on the defensive end, right? He was averaging like a block and like half a steal a game. He was making more flash plays defensively, but he still kind of just is what he is on the defensive end. And it's been interesting to kind of watch them try and legislate their way around his limitations defensively. I did want to talk about Bagley though, because he is playing better, right? He is contributing more offensively, and that is a big part of why you want this two big lineup to work, because of what both those guys can bring offensively if they can ever get anything going defensively. Remember we talked a couple weeks back, Bagley was, his numbers were down. He wasn't probably fully conditioned for NBA basketball. In his last six games, he's back up to 16 points and 8 rebounds per game, shooting 64% from the floor. I think his efficiency is a really big help to this team. Just having another big man who is an efficient finisher around the rim is really big for Killian and Jaden in particular. Bagley is also shooting 54% on threes, fewer than two attempts a game. He's going one for two from three every night. I don't know how long that's going to continue, but he is getting open looks, right, Ben? I think it's been interesting. When I was envisioning the two big lineup in my head, is like, okay, which one of these bigs is going to be the space, the quote-unquote spacing big, right? And we've seen some improvements from Stu in that area, big jump. If Marvin Bagley is confident, like, is it possible that both of these guys are the spacing bigs? Could we dare to dream?
So I think I'm probably going to be a Bagley spacing skeptic until, kind of like I was with Stu. Like, you know, I need to see him do it for 20 or 30 games because he's been so bad throughout his career shooting the three. I mean, plus the thing about him spacing is it takes him away from the thing he's best at, which is being the inside vertical finisher. And I think I've seen other guys really looking for him in the lob game other than just Killian too, right? Like we've seen a couple of the other guards looking for
him. Brooks has looked for him, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't think I want him drifting too far away from his main tool set. And that's the thing that opens things up for everybody else too. So, I mean, two attempts a game, that doesn't seem horrible if he's playing like starter caliber minutes. Two attempts isn't awful, especially if he's just wide open. But I mean, he took a few mid-range shots. I don't mind the mid-range shots as much as I mind the threes, because he's still at least theoretically only a few strides away from getting back towards the rim. And also, like I talked about his offensive rebounding, like he had a putback dunk or two. Like that's really where I want him taking advantage of his athleticism, his vertical spacing abilities. I want him inside. So I think I kind of like Stu as the spacing big man. And interestingly, I feel like Dallas was kind of pressuring Stu, running him off the line a couple times, which was fascinating to me, because that's the thing we've been wondering if teams would start doing. I think Stu shot like 5 for 9 or something. He shot really well against New York. I don't remember what the exact numbers were. And then Stu put the ball on the floor, which that was also interesting. Let's just say, I mean, that's the next part of his development, right? Let's just put it that way, because it didn't go particularly well when Stu dribbled, but the defense had to respond to Stu shooting, which, I mean, that's good. That's progress. The long answer to your question, Laz, is I think I like Bagley staying more on the inside, and I think I like Stu staying more on the outside, but I don't mind if Bagley's going to be a decent 3-point shooter. I don't mind him at like 2 attempts a game. I think that's okay.
Yeah. I wonder what decent ends up looking like, right? He is a career 30%. Marvin Bagley is a career 30% 3-point shooter. I would be shocked if he shoots like 33% this season. But I'd suppose that's on like the low end of possible. It does help that a lot of these looks are wide open. I do wonder, like you mentioned, teams starting to run Stu off the line. And now that's the next development of his game. Bagley is a guy I trust a little bit more if teams are going to run out at him. It's just harder to see a world in which teams are like really attacking Marvin Bagley on closeouts. But yeah, it's been the offensive rebounding point is a good one. It's a point I wish I would have thought of. And the other thing is like the there's some mid post stuff. They like to give him the ball on the right side, let him attack to that strong left hand in like mid ISO situations. They can get away with that like once or twice a game. I'm fine with that if it, you know, keeps Marvin engaged. But yeah, it's been interesting to just see him kind of get back to what he's doing. And I don't want to take the 16 again, 16-8 is like that's meaningful production. So I shouldn't really quibble with the production, but the shot selection has been like an issue for me at times. There was that late corner three in the Dallas game. He like took a corner three with like 14 on the shot clock late in the game. And like my head is like in my hands as soon as he catches the ball in the corner, like Marvin, no, don't do it. And he did it.
He did.
And it missed and it didn't kill them. But that's that fine line between like confidence and arrogance or whatever the quote is. Yeah, I think about spacing as well. If Marvin Bagley is going to be shooting open threes, that means teams are just like continuing to pack the paint against this too big lineup, and that's going to make offensive rebounding harder for Stewart, for guys like Jaden Ivey likes to crash every now and again. And if the paint is just full of bodies because no one is a threat on the perimeter, I feel like that's going to be an offensive issue like sooner rather than later, especially if I don't expect Marvin Bagley to continue shooting the ball this well. But hey, like, again, I'm not going to be mad at 16-8. Like, it is what it is. Yeah. All right, Ben. The story of the week. Killian Hayes outdueled Luka Doncic in overtime in a real-life NBA game. As a starter now, Killian's up to almost 12 points a game, 3 rebounds a game, 6 assists per game, less than 2 turnovers per contest. He's shooting 44% from the field, 40% from 3, and 88% from the line. But like we mentioned last week, now he's down to less than 1 free throw a game, which is still barely bad. Like we've been talking about this for a couple weeks. Well, we actively avoided talking about it for 1 week, and so now this is, I guess, the second week we've been talking about it. But nothing with Killian has really changed over the course of us talking about it, which I feel like is a good thing. It's kind of what I was hoping for, right? That he would continue to, this would be a new level of play for him. And like, we wouldn't expect a baseline kind of below this. I remain very quietly glad I held most of my Killian stock then.
Laz has been hodling like nobody's business. Hodling the stonks. Yeah, man, Killian. I mean, we got to talk about the wins because they don't happen that often, and it's been the most recent game, and it was in such dramatic fashion. So we got to celebrate it when it happens. Okay, my favorite part of the Mavs win, obviously Killian Hayes. My favorite part of Killian Hayes, the narrative, was the one that I don't think was talked about a lot, and it's that the Cavs worked the Pistons in the fourth quarter. And in particular, Donovan Mitchell worked the Pistons. And in particular, Donovan Mitchell worked Killian Hayes late in the fourth quarter. And you could see Killian trying to respond a little bit offensively and just struggling to do so in that Cavs game. Pistons really controlled that Cavs game for like 3.5 quarters. I mean, they were pretty much, I'm not sure if it was wire to wire, but it was pretty close until like, I don't know, like 7:45, something like that. Donovan hit a three. I think the Pistons maybe grabbed the lead back one more time, but the Cavs pretty much controlled it from there. And then it was like a parade to the free throw line. Donovan and Garland just drawing foul after foul, knocking down shot after shot, and the Pistons just had no answer. And I think if you look at the trajectory of Killian Hayes in his young career, it would have been so easy for him to lose confidence and get discouraged. And what we saw instead, well, there was the blowout loss to the Knicks, but the next opportunity he had to respond in a close game against an NBA superstar, he responded the way he did against the Mavs and against Luka. So, I mean, that's phenomenal. I mean, that's just an incredible sign of growth and maturity. I'm, what, 3 weeks away, 4 weeks away? I mean, 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, I was openly wondering, like, is Killian Hayes unplayable? Like, is his shooting so bad? He was, like, at, what, 27-28% true shooting percentage? I mean, is his shooting so bad that he needs to go to a stint in the G League and figure stuff out? Because he was struggling. Like, everything else, like, I've been singing his praises everywhere else. So, like, great defender, really good court vision, really good passing, but the shooting is so bad. Like, can you continue to play him? Last three games, true shooting percentage of 60-plus percentage. I mean, totally turned it around since Cade has gone down with an injury. I think, to me, what's so fascinating, Laz, is you look at this young kid's career. Hi, Chester. That's my dog. You look at this young kid's career, he's been shuffled around into so many different roles, from starting as a rookie, getting hurt, coming back. Then they draft Cade. He's on the bench. He's playing off the ball, throwing him into the corner to shoot, catch and shoot threes. Then all of a sudden this season, Cade goes down. He's having a terrible season, but Cade goes down. He gets put back into his natural position. He's got a long leash to make mistakes without worry of getting benched. And all of a sudden, he's thriving. So you put him in the situation where he can just play instinctively. He can just do the things he's always done for his entire career after, you know, this is his third year, even though he hasn't played 3 years worth of games. But he's had 2.5 years of being in the NBA, developing, being around NBA coaches, around NBA players. All of a sudden, he's thriving. You know, he's still a long way to go, all of that stuff aside. He's thriving in the role that he has always played, and he's just playing. He's just reacting. He's just playing basketball. It looks to me like he's out of his head. He's not overthinking every single thing he does. He's just taking step back threes. He's just getting by his defender and taking a jump shot, or he's making a play and dishing to the... He's just playing basketball with the ball in his hands. And that's really refreshing to see because, look, I mean, a lot of the fan base has been ready to give up on the kid. You've been holding the stock, which is great. I was getting close to being like, I don't know, man. I don't know. But you give him the ball and you just let him play, and you can see the glimpses of a real NBA basketball player. And, yeah, he outduels Luka, and that's got to be the absolute career highlight for him so far. Absolutely a blast as a Pistons fan to watch.
The thing I was afraid of with Killian is that the front office would feel pressure to give up on him. You know, Cade ascends really rapidly. Jaden Ivey ascends really rapidly. There's a good group of guards like at the top of this year's draft class. And so they're like, okay, like we can get, it was like, this was a mistake. We can trade Killian. We can draft another guard, or we don't really need another guard, right? We still need wings. And so we can move on from this guy. And then, like you mentioned, he would go to a situation where he would end up in his natural position of point guard, of guy with the ball in his hands most of the time. And we would see some of the development we're seeing right here. I was so fearful that we were going to see that development happen somewhere else. And so I'm so glad that it's happening here in Detroit, in front of our eyes. I will say, I thought he actually played well in the Knicks game. He had a hot start. He went like 3 for 3, and then like by the time he ran his second stint, they were already up 20, and like the game was kind of over, and it just kind of was what it was. But yeah, he's been playing really well since he became a starter. But Ben, like you mentioned, he's playing so poorly at the beginning of the season. Like his numbers still haven't like caught up to the fact that he's even like average. Like you still look at his field goal percentage for the year, it's still awful. You still look at his true shooting percentage for the year, it's still awful. You know, true shooting is not going to be kind to a guy who doesn't get to the free throw line as much as he doesn't get to the free throw line. But still, the efficiency numbers are still not great for him. But yeah, he's just playing. He's just playing. And you can see him starting to we talked about the two big lineup a little bit earlier. You can see him starting to kind of figure out like how to maneuver that as well from a playmaking perspective. We saw the late game pass to Marvin Bagley, who was cutting from the baseline underneath the basket to get a layup. We saw the manipulation of the defense to get Isaiah Stewart, like a wide open layup down the stretch of the Dallas game as well. And so he's continuing to do this scoring outburst is in fact like doing what we were hoping for and making him even more dangerous as a playmaker, because now defenses have to account for like two possibilities when he starts getting downhill with the ball in his hands. The other thing I want to mention is that like Dallas's defense has been horrendous for a couple of weeks now. You know, we saw what the Christian Wood at as your main big guy experiment looks like on defense, and it wasn't great. And so I'm not surprised that Killian was able to play well against that level of perimeter defense. I do think a lot of his struggles in the Cleveland game that you brought up was due to the fact that like Evan Mobley's kind of like lurking as like that second line defender. And so he was a little bit more cautious about trying some of the stuff he's tried with Evan Mobley, like, you know, just in the back kind of, you know, roaming. And so I do wonder what he will look like as he continues to garner more defensive attention, as teams start to like put him in the scouting report as like, hey, this guy can shoot now. Like, hey, this guy's playing with confidence now. You might actually have to guard him. But at the same time, like as long as he's able to get to he's 6'5", 6'7", wingspan, right? Like, he should be able to get to these comfort spots, like 16 feet and in, 12 feet and in, you know, 8 feet and out. He should still be able to get to all these shots, and he's shooting them much more confidently, and he's shooting them much more on balance. And it just, he just looks like a completely different player. And I'm ecstatic to see it. It was interesting to me too, as well. This is the second scheduling quirk game we've had over the last couple of seasons where the Pistons have been they've been in the only NBA game played that night. And so you get like the entire NBA universe kind of watching the Pistons, and you always hope that that you're judged fairly during those games. But now we've had two big performances in those games, right? The Sadiq Bey 51 point game and the Killian Hayes like outdueling Luka game. It's just it's interesting to note that like that's happened the last two times. Like the entire NBA has been watching the Pistons.
Yeah, and I think, you know, for Killian, it's all about establishing a foundation to build on, right? He struggled to have a consistent chunk of 20 games, 30 games where he can build an identity and go into the next chunk of development with that identity. So, you know, here's hoping this chunk of games, and it seems like it's going to be a while, right? Cade doesn't have any timeline for return. Hopefully this chunk of games, 30, 40, 50 games, is that identity building sort of development plan for him. That's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah. You mentioned Cade too. I do think that like this recent stretch of games is encouraging, but I also think the Pistons, like from a coaching and front office perspective, are aware of like what this means when Cade returns, right? Like, I still think Killian is in their long-term plans as a backup, as perhaps a higher level backup than we were expecting, but as a backup to Cade, to Jaden Ivey, perhaps Dwayne Casey's maneuvering lineups where you play all three of those guys together. I know that's a Dwayne Casey thing he would probably like to do, but we're still as we build a baseline, we keep in mind that like this baseline is not necessarily like starting level NBA guard, and like that makes it even better because now the baseline he has to hit as a backup guard is even lower, and it feels like that's a little bit more feasible. Absolutely. But yeah, the comfort is up, the feel is up, the playmaking is up. It's been great to see from Killian Hayes.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
Conversely, Sadiq Bey.
Yeah.
Sadiq Bey tweaked his ankle against, he didn't play. Did he tweak his ankle against Sacramento, or he didn't play? I think Sacramento was the first game he missed. So that makes the Utah game where he tweaked his ankle. Either way, Sadiq Bey came back after missing a couple games. He's played three games since his return. And in those three games, he's averaging 10 points a game. He's averaging 10.7 points a game. So almost 11 points a game, four rebounds a game, less than an assist per game. And he's shooting 36% from the floor, 15% from three, and 75% from the line, only getting to the line 2.7 times per game. Ben, what happened to Sadiq Bey?
Yeah, Sadiq has had a real struggle this season, hasn't he? I mean,
yeah.
So the three-point shooting remains extremely difficult for me to get my head around. I've thought about this every way I know how to think about it. I was looking at it again, thinking about the podcast for this week. I was looking at some of the numbers, trying to figure out if they're, you know, just because I watch the games, I test it, and then I look at the numbers. Like, is there something in the numbers that I'm not seeing in the eye test? One of the things I looked at was assisted threes versus unassisted threes. Like, is there something about, is he being asked to create a whole bunch of his more own three-point attempts? As a rookie, 93% of his makes from three were assisted. As a third-year player, 93% of his threes are assisted. That surprised me. It's identical. The big counterpoint here, the big thing that's different, as a rookie, 67% of his attempts were from three. This year, 47% are. So the thing I've been just sort of noticing as I watch Sadiq is it seems like, and Laz, tell me what you think of this. It seems like his two-point shots, we've seen a dramatic increase in the number of two-point shots he's taking. But it seems like he's got to work really hard for the two-point shots that he takes. And it seems like the difficulty of those shots is pretty high. Like, I was noticing this week. He came off the bench against Dallas, I think. And it seemed like the looks that he had to get were just tough. Like, you know, off the dribble, sort of like his, you know, his off the dribble stuff is very deliberate and methodical, but then it often turns into, like, you know, he's got the guy on his back or on his hip, and it turns into like the 15 to 17 foot, like, fadeaway jumper. That's not an easy shot. I mean, mm-hmm. Those are tough shots to make, and they're semi-contested or fully contested looks. And so in addition to being really difficult shots that drag your percentages down, they take a lot of effort. So I guess, you know, Laz, you've hinted at this and talked about this. This is my best theory as well. He's just working so hard to get the two-point looks that he's getting that it's either a mental thing or it's actually a physical thing. Like, he's just actually fatigued and his legs aren't there. And as a result, he's either in his head, like, he's just not seeing the ball go through the hoop. So when he's shooting the three, it's in his head and there's something psychological going on. Or he's fatigued, and as a result, his just legs aren't there, and he's not knocking down the three. So that's the best I got. I don't know if either of those are right. But either way, no matter what's going on, if I'm totally off base, the three-point shooting, Laz, like, this has got to get right. Like, he's got to figure this out, whether it's here, whether it's elsewhere. I'd love for it to be here. It's a great story. I like Sadiq scoring 51 points. As a Detroit Piston, you want that kind of guy to stay a Piston. He fits everything about the way he plays, the way he works. Like, you want that to be here. But man, it's been rough, and that 3-point shooting is just, it's not going to get it done.
I wonder if the way he was producing earlier in the year, right, is impacting the type of shots he's choosing to take now. When we were talking about Sadiq earlier this year, right, he was maintaining a 60% true shooting percentage, mm-hmm. Yeah. And he was in the starting lineup, and he was being productive because he was able to generate a lot of free throws, because he was able to get fouled on a lot of these tough shots, because, like you mentioned, his in-between game is so deliberate. He's able to kind of coax guys into position, get him on the hip, get him on the back, throw out the jab, throw out the pump fake, get them in the air, and then kind of get, you know, draw contact and go to the free throw line from there. Off the bench, it seems like that hasn't been the case as much so far. Like I mentioned, he's only shooting 2.7 free throw attempts per game. That's a big decrease in what he was shooting earlier this season. I wonder about the fatigue. I wonder about the change in role, right? He's coming off the bench now. He was starting. That does have an impact on your, like, on your game, on your mental ability. We discussed, like, what the impact of the two big lineup would be, like, when Marvin Bagley was hurt. And you and I kind of agreed that, like, it made sense that Sadiq was the guy who needed to come off the bench, because the thought was, right, Bojan is a better shooter than Sadiq, and we need the spacing in the starting lineup. But also, the way Sadiq was playing earlier in the season, you know, having the ball in his hands a lot, being able to draw so many free throws, that, like, that seemed like a good match with the bench lineup. Now, with Alec Burks kind of in the lineup, handling the ball a lot, it does kind of seem like there's not as much opportunity for Sadiq to do that, and he's not producing when he's able to get those opportunities. And so this is just a transitory thing, I hope, for Sadiq. I think it's more likely than not he'll break out of this. I saw someone tweeted this out. He's shooting, I think he's down to like 27-28% from three on the season. And someone pointed out that, like, this time last year, he was also shooting like 27-28% from three. And so maybe he is just one of those guys who starts the season slow regardless, picks it up in, you know, January, February, and we see how it goes from there. I'm willing to give Sadiq all the leash that he needs in order to start playing better. I got a DM from a guy who analyzes the play of, like, another team, and he was asking me, like, you know, what do you think of Sadiq? Like, I've seen he's struggling. He's like, do you think he's in the Pistons' long term plans? And my first instinct was like, oh yeah, absolutely. Like, he's still, like, they're not going to give up on him. But, like, the more I thought about it, like, the role change does not speak to, like, hey, we, like, highly value you. The way he's producing is not worth someone who should be highly valued, right? So I do think he's in the long-term plans for Detroit, but because of that, they're going to give him the space to kind of figure things out. But this is a really interesting kind of inflection point for Sadiq. We keep bringing up his rookie year, and it feels like he's been playing a more expansive offensive role, but been worse at it ever since his rookie year. And part of me does wonder, like, does he just need to simplify things? Does he just need to go out there and, like, emulate Isaiah Livers, right? We're shooting six times a game. Four of those are threes. We need to hit two of them, and, like, that's our role off the bench. And maybe that's, like, a good baseline to get him going into the future. But yeah, it's been so odd to watch Sadiq kind of, like, work his way through these things, for sure. The other thing I'll say is, like, if Sadiq is going to be a guy off the bench who has the ball in his hands a little bit more, like, less, again, with Alec Burks in the lineup, but still kind of like a secondary or tertiary guy, he's averaging under one assist per game. Like, that's kind of in line with what he was doing as a starter. He has to be better as a playmaker. He missed Jalen Duren, was wide open underneath the basket a couple times just because he's got his head down and he's driving to the rim. That kind of thing is going to be really important, and was more excusable when you were knocking down shots. But, like, as your shot has deserted you, you need to keep your head up and be able to look and find your teammates for easier and more effective shots, for sure. All right, Ben. I wanted to take this time to acknowledge the contributions of Bojan Bogdanović and Alec Burks. We don't talk about them on this podcast because they're, you know, here for a good time, not a long time, with this Pistons core. They're the 30 and up crew. Like, we, you know, we're more interested in what the young guys are doing. But both of those guys' play has been instrumental in keeping the Pistons competitive and competent during, like, this last couple stretch of games. And you're right, the theory that Troy Weaver has put forward of, like, complementary vets surrounding your best players to get you to get your young guys in position to produce and get them ready to contribute in the ways that you want them to, has been effective so far for the Pistons, even as they've only won, what, like, six games And so I'm happy with Troy Weaver, and I'm happy with Bojan Bogdanovic and Alec Burks. Those were great acquisitions. Just because we're not talking about them doesn't mean we're not appreciative.
Yeah, absolutely. Bojan's been a pleasure to watch in particular. I had no idea how versatile he was as a scorer. I've mentioned that a couple times. The dude is not only a catch-and-shoot phenom. I mean, he's able to get his three-point shot off from all sorts of ridiculous, sort of fundamentally awful catch-and-shoot positions. Like, and it just speaks to how good he is as a shooter. But then in addition to that, he's just like the crafty old dude from the Y. Like, he manages to cross people up in the ugliest, grossest ways, but get by them, and then also get to the free throw line at a stupidly good rate. Like, I mean, he's just much better and much more of a complete package offensively than I would have realized. Defensively, I mean, he's not that good. But offensively, absolutely. And Alec Burks is kind of the same way, right? Like, I mean, he gets to the free throw line a crazy amount as well. Very good shooter off the dribble, which I did not anticipate. I think a lot of players would love to. I mean, Bojan could probably start for a lot of teams. I think Burks would probably come off the bench for a lot of playoff teams as well and contribute. It'll be interesting to see if they both. Burks, you know, I don't know. Maybe he doesn't finish the season as a Piston. I would imagine Bojan does, but it'll be interesting to see if he finishes his contract as a Piston, because I think a lot of teams would love to have him the way he's playing right now.
Yeah. Burks, I think. I wonder about him finishing the year. I wonder about him getting traded, just like because of the extra year with the team option. Like, that's an attractive deal for other teams. Absolutely. It's not a full rental situation. But if the Pistons like traded him for, a top 25 draft pick, a future first round pick, whatever the case may be, it's like that's all of a sudden like a lot of ball handling and free throw generating and points off the bench that you're just like missing, right? It's just gone. And so like that's definitely it feels weird to say it, but like, yeah, trading Alec Burks is definitely like a tanking move. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if this team wants to be in full tanking position. The other thing is like Cade's injury might impact this, right? I think if Cade were healthy, it might make the loss of another ball. If Cade were healthy and Killian were still, developing along a similar arc, probably not this exact arc, but a similar arc, it might make trading in Alec Burks even easier, because then like you'd have, two point guards and you feel comfortable about that. Right now, if you trade Alec Burks, like you got like Kojo, and like we're back to Kojo, and it's like that. I don't know if that's where they want to be in March per se.
That Rodney Magruder put back dunk though. I mean, we all want to see more of that.
We almost got Bol Bol for Rodney Magruder.
What could have been?
You never know. All right, Ben. What have you been thinking about this week? What's going on in Ben's corner?
Oh, Laz, I hate to say this, I do, but Jalen Duren's free throws are giving me nightmares. Why is it that every Pistons athletically dominant big man has to be a 50% free throw shooter? Laz, it's not fair. I think it's 46%, 47% right now. Know any shooting coaches, any sports psychologists? Like, what do we got to do, man? Because this kid could be a phenom. But I really don't want to do this sub the kid out every other possession, because we got a 50% free throw shooter again. I don't know if I can take it.
Okay. It's 46.5%. That is not good.
No.
So far he has shot 43 free throws. That's not a lot. I guess that is kind of a long-term issue. If he's going to be closing games, you could do the hack of Duren. That seems to have kind of lowered in popularity around the league. So like maybe that's a tactic that we see less of, but yeah, it's not great. And it's interesting too, right? Because Duren displays a good level of touch from 12 feet and in. We've seen him hit some turnaround jumpers. More importantly, we've seen him take a lot of turnaround jumpers that I don't always love, but when he's able to like face up and get to his spots, he does look confident in taking those shots. The free throws, I don't know. He was this, and this is a continuation of what he was doing in college, right? I think he was like a 60, he's a mid 60s per free throw shooter in college.
I mean, I would take that in a heartbeat. Like, I can live with that.
Yeah. He'll probably figure it out.
I hope so.
I wish you guys could see our faces. We're both just like kind of groaning our way through this.
It's just like this team. I mean, they get, it's like we've wanted a team that gets to the free throw line, Laz. Like we've begged, get to the free throw line, please. And this year they get to the free throw line, but they can't make it. Like rebounding and free throws, like if they would have fixed those issues, how many games would they have managed to, you know, be in the game?
At least two. The right? Toronto game and the there's another game earlier this season that they lost at the free throw line. But definitely like the first Toronto game, they lost that game at the line.
Right. But like even the Cleveland game, you can't say they would have won the game, but they would have been like more in the game over the last, you know, three possessions of the game where Cleveland's running away with it at the free throw line, right? Like they would have been competing in those last three possessions instead of Cleveland just knocking down free throws and the Pistons hucking up contested isos, right? Like trying to get back in it with contested three. So yeah, free throws, man. Jalen Duren is what made me think of it. We gotta get these figured out before it becomes a thing. 'Cause 46%, man, that's not it.
It was also quietly like the C plot of the Dallas game, right? Like neither team shot well.
Oh my God. It was brutal.
Yeah, and the win didn't have to go to overtime if the Pistons made more free throws, but they didn't. And Luka also missed, you know, two free throws late, then immediately got the ball back and hit a step back three.
Hit a three. Like step back three over, I don't remember who it was, but
yeah. I think it was Boyan. But yeah. This team definitely would be better if they could make their free throws. It's been good to see that they've finally, with these vets, have an emphasis on getting to the free throw line, on getting those easy points. But you also have dudes, you know, like Hami has struggled from the free throw line, like at times this season. You mentioned Jalen Duren, Jaden Ivey quietly shooting, I think like in the 70s from the free throw line, not good enough. But yeah, it's just, it's not, it's been kind of running. Yeah, it's 72% for Jaden Ivey, or almost 73%. So yeah, not as good as you would like it to be. But yeah, this is quietly something that is not good for the Pistons. All right, Ben, the Pistons play Memphis later tonight. Then they go back on the road already, and another back-to-back. They play Miami on Tuesday and New Orleans on Wednesday. Those are going to be two very tough games. New Orleans in particular is going to give this team fits. They are long. They are athletic. They are skilled. They are explosive. That is a really, if they weren't playing the Pistons, it's like, it's a really fun team to watch. So that's going to be a kind of a tough game. And then actually they play the Grizzlies again on Friday, this time on the road. And then they go back home to play the Lakers, the suddenly resurgent Los Angeles Lakers at home on Sunday. Any of those games stand out to you as a potential upset alert, Ben?
Do any of them ever last? Let's.
Well, you called one last
week. I did. I called one. I called the Mavs. I did. I didn't call it would be Killian putting Luka in his place, but I did. I did manage to call that.
You take it no matter. There are no pictures on the scorecard, right?
Right. I'm actually really looking forward to the New Orleans game because I haven't watched Zion play. So hopefully he doesn't, like, you know, fracture an ankle or something between now and then, because I'd really like to watch him. Hopefully I didn't jinx him. Miami always feels vulnerable to me, but again, we're vulnerable to athletic bigs. I always feel like, you know, I never know what we're going to get from Miami. They've got old guards. You know, Kyle Lowry is like almost as old as me and you, Les. So like maybe they're vulnerable. Not the Lakers. They're playing well. And they've got LeBron and AD. Let's go with Grizzlies tonight. Let's go with Miami. I'm going to go with Miami as the winnable game this week.
Okay. I like that. Yeah, Zion has been playing really well. They played the Raptors earlier this week, and he had a spin move through like three Raptors for a breakaway dunk.
His highlights are just ridiculous.
the picture, you know how they have like the camera behind the backboard that like takes the midair flights? It's like they've got the shot of him like rising up for the dunk and like literally the five Raptors behind him in a circle just kind of like staring in awe. It's like Zion's so fun to watch.
I hope he stays healthy because he's just so much fun. For anyone who loves basketball, like he's so fun to watch. Like his highlights. I mean, just what it's like if you love football, you go watch Barry Sanders highlights and just be in awe. Like he's like, it's like that to me. Like he just does stuff that nobody else can do, and his frame and his body, like no one else has that. So yeah. I just really hope he stays healthy, and I haven't watched him play a complete game this season. So I'm looking forward to that game.
College Zion was one of the few guys who like made my wife like look up from whatever she was doing on her phone and be like, whoa, who's that guy? That guy's crazy. He's like, yep, he's real, real good. So yeah, I absolutely hope we do get to see Zion play. Obviously in a Pistons win, right? Like we want Zion to score 40 and do all a bunch of cool stuff, and Killian to also score 40 in the Pistons win. But yeah, it'll be definitely fun to watch the Pelicans play. All right, Ben. Good talking to you. Good seeing you. Happy about Michigan's Big Ten championship for you on behalf of you guys.
Appreciate
if
that.
You didn't win, I was definitely going to have some Purdue jokes ready for you, but that's okay. We didn't have to do all that.
The fake punt. I was like, are they really going to do this? They're just going to run trick plays all night.
The fake flea flicker was a stroke of brilliance. I loved that.
I was waiting for the double fake to come out in the second half or something crazy.
Let the people know where they can find you, where they can chat up with you about the Pistons season, and perhaps a college football playoff win over a team to be named later.
Oh wow, yeah, that would be crazy. At BR Golker on Twitter, you can find me when the games are live and I'm awake to see them. not always a guarantee in the second half.
Even hey, New Orleans on the road, that's East Coast time.
East Coast. Otherwise, you can find me in the comments at DetroitBadBoys.com. No Kate hate this week. I do pay attention.
Of course, you can follow me on Twitter at Last Chance. That's at LazChance. This has been the Detroit Bad Boys podcast. Thank you all so much for listening. We truly appreciate it. And we will talk to you all next week. See you guys.